This podcast of Seattle Unity Sunday Service is free to you, but it's not free to make. Please remember to hit the donate button so we can continue to bring you great podcasts like this one.
Good morning and welcome to the Seattle Unity live stream Sunday service. I'm Erin McGaughan, and today we have on keys, you can hear David Loy. Welcome back, David. Yay. Also later today, you'll hear from our special guest worship artist, Stephanie Ann Johnson. We're thrilled to have her back as well. We're thrilled to have them back. I misgendered. So Stephanie Ann Johnson is now using they, them pronouns. I'm highly supportive of this. You may hear me misgender them, and I will try and correct myself as much as possible. Meanwhile, let's sing this song. This is I Am As God Created Me. I am as God created me, in the light, in the love, in the glory. I am as God created me, in the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory, I am. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory, I am. Now, you probably know this song already, but if you don't, it comes in two parts, and you can sing those parts on top of each other if you're singing with someone else and it comes out to a beautiful harmony. So I'm going to encourage you to try that with me at home. Right now, because of COVID restrictions, we're not singing harmonies on site, so it's up to you to be my harmony partner here. So I'm gonna sing and see if you can, you can either just repeat the first section or you can do the second section while I'm doing the first. Let's try it. I am as God created me, in the light, in the love, in the glory. I am as God created me, in the light, in the love, in the glory. Yeah, in the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the love, in the glory, I am. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory, I am. Let us pray.
And we do call forth the activity of Spirit, which is always present everywhere at every moment. And so I invite you to join me in affirming our opening statement together. There is but one presence and one power in my life and in the universe, God the good, omnipotence.
This song is written by Michael Stillwater, who is a great New Thought artist, been active for decades, and he lives in the mountains in the Swiss Alps. So imagine when you do the, if you're doing the movements, and I hope you are, because they're very good for us. They increase our sense of optimism and openness to new ideas. So if you're out of your chair, arms up, I am as God created me, in the light, in the love, in the glory. And imagine that you're in Switzerland and you're doing this out on your marvelous deck and you're yodeling this off to the other side of the great canyon of the Swiss Alps. Let's wake the neighbors. Here we go. I am as God created me. In the light, in the love, in the glory, yeah. I am as God created me. In the light, in the love, in the glory, yeah. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory, I am. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory. In the light, in the love, in the glory, I am. I am. 'cause God created me in the light, in the love, in the glory. Real soft. I am as God created me in the light, in the love, in the glory.
Thank you, Aaron and David. So good morning and welcome. Thank you for joining us for our Seattle Unity Sunday service, or if you're tuning in some other day or time, we're grateful that you're joining with us at any time, in any moment. Reverend Karen is away again this Sunday. She's doing visioning and planning for the year ahead for our community. We have guest speaker Michael Bogar, who you will hear from a little bit later. So let us first begin by affirming our vision statement together. We are an accessible and inclusive spiritual sanctuary for all ages and stages of life. We offer spiritual practices and a community that honors diversity and encourages self-empowerment. We co-create a world that works for all. Before we get into a few of our other announcements, first we have a special announcement from our Youth and Family Director, Heidi Nathy. Heidi, are you there?
My name is Heidi Nathy, and I'm the Youth Ed Director here at Seattle Unity. And I just wanted to let everybody know what's going on in Youth and Family Ministry. We have been having Children's Church and YOU on Zoom calls. Children's Church happens the second and the fourth Sunday of each month, and YOU is each and every Sunday. Children's Church is at 12 o'clock noon, and we are having church today. Please join us, and we'll have a great time. YOU starts at 11 o'clock. And we will see you every Sunday. If you are interested in either of these programs, please send me an email at youth@seattleunity.org. And I look forward to seeing all of you.
Thank you, Heidi. I want to call out just a couple of things that were in your newsletter that came out this last week. So again, our guest speaker today is Michael Bogar. He is leading a three-week class that starts Wednesdays, and so we invite you to sign up for that. I know you will be even more interested after hearing his talk. Also want to just call out what was in the newsletter, a save the date for our annual meeting, February 21st, which will be virtual, and there will be more info coming out on that as well. Finally, invite you to enter any prayers or prayer requests into the chat, and then we will pray for all of those at the end of the service. And now, a few other announcements.
Day by day. Turn a page to a more contemplative part of the service. We'll do a chant leading into a meditation, because our topics today will include concepts of reincarnation. I've chosen an Om Namah Shivaya chant from Hinduism, which is one of the many traditions that includes concepts of reincarnation. It is an invocation of Lord Shiva, who is commonly associated with death or great transition. following the chant, the meditation. If you are an eyes open person, you will see a Ganesha meditation, which is a series of images of Lord Ganesha, who is commonly associated with removal of obstacles. So we're dealing with great transition and removal of obstacles, probably timely. As I'm chanting, you may also find it very boring because I'm holding the low melody. I'm doing that consciously so that those of you who are musicians or want to explore embellishments and harmonies in the kirtan style may do that. Om Namah Shivaya. 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 Om Namah Shivaya.
Shame is a prison as cruel as the grave. Shame is a robber and he's come to take my name. Love is my redeemer, lifting me up off the ground. Love is the power where my freedom song is found. And oh, grave, gonna hold my body down. And oh, grave, gonna hold my body down. When I hear trumpet sound, gonna rise up out of the ground. It ain't no grave, gonna hold my body down. Fear is a liar with smooth and velvet tongue. Fear is a tyrant, always telling me to run. But love is resurrection. Love is a trumpet sound. Love is my weapon. Gonna take my giants down. It ain't no grave. Gonna hold my body down. It ain't no grave. Gonna hold my body down. When I hear that trumpet sound, gonna rise up out of the ground.
Thank you. Beautiful. Good morning. And I want to first of all thank Reverend Karen for inviting me back to share with you all, and also to let you know how much I miss you. That is, you as a body here in this room. It's been quite different this last year, doing classes online or with Blackboard, and now in front of this camera, which is a little intimidating and difficult because I can't see you. But I can imagine you, and hopefully you get to participate this morning with us this way. So what I want to share this morning is related to what I've been experiencing the last 3 years. In 2017, my sister, younger sister, was diagnosed with cancer and died in 2017. A year later, almost to the date, within one day of my sister's death, my brother passed away, younger brother. Shortly after that, my father's wife passed away just a few days after my brother. My father called us and said, would you move to Enumclaw and help me because I'm dying of heart failure? And so we moved to Enumclaw in 2019 and took care of my dad until he passed away in 2020. During that same period, my wife's two parents were in assisted living and they both passed away in that same time period. So I'm not saying this to garner sympathy or to say, oh, you poor guy. That's not the point. The point is, for some reason, we have been placed in an environment where death has really, really, really been the focus. And not just death, but dying, the process. And I've never been really comfortable with that process. So it's almost like I was pushed into these situations without a choice. And as a result of spending lots of time, literally hours with my father and watching and talking to him as he slowly died, and then going to the assisted living homes with my wife and knowing her parents fairly well and watching both of them go through that process and talking to them about the afterlife, is there such a thing, what's it like, etc., has really caused me to look at this issue. And getting older hasn't discouraged it. So what I want to do this morning is talk about something I've been fascinated by for years, but never really focused on it until the last year or two. And that is what we typically understand through the terminology as reincarnation. Now, my intention this morning as we talk about this notion of reincarnation is twofold. First of all, I want to introduce you to the work of Dr. Ian Stevenson. If you don't know the guy, I want you to know him well. He died in 2007, I think. But I want you to note his research, and I want to introduce you to his basic life's work, which was contacting children or getting in touch with children, families, but especially the children from the ages of 2 to 6, sometimes a little older, who had spoken to their parents about past life experiences, naming places and people and events and details. These little 2-year-old, 3-year-old children naming details that were just mind-boggling. So Stevenson devoted his entire life working at the University of Virginia in the Department of Psychiatry and actually got an endowment from Chester Carlson, the inventor of xerography, what we know as the Xerox copy machine. Made millions and millions of dollars. And Carlson put a lot of that money into the University of Virginia and gave it to Dr. Ian Stevenson to do full-time research in contacting these children and their families internationally, India, Burma, Lebanon, Turkey, Europe, America, the West Coast, a lot of cases on the West Coast with the Tlingit and Haida and Alaskan Indians. And he studied about 3,000 cases in his lifetime, I mean, in detail, as a scientist. He was not a believer in reincarnation, and he makes it very clear, Dr. Stevenson does, that he is not out to prove or disprove reincarnation. He's not a reincarnationist. That is, he doesn't believe in reincarnationism. He's not trying to prove Hinduism or Buddhism or Jainism or Sikhism or any of the religions that teach reincarnation. He's curious about the evidence. Are these children actually telling the truth, first of all? Are they being coached? Is there something other that could explain this phenomenon of children talking about past lives and being with other families? Can it be studied? That's what Dr. Ian Stevenson did with his whole life. And if you watch him on YouTube or any kind of live lecture, you'll find him to be a very methodic, meticulous, boring person. So his presentations are not going to wow you. And if you go to Ian Stevenson to find out about, you know, the doctrine of reincarnation, you won't. He actually, and his team, and he has a team now that's around working around the world, felt that, if anything, the notion or the idea of reincarnation has evidence, strong evidence behind it, which we're going to look at this morning very, very briefly. And in the class coming up, we're going to spend a lot of time looking at the evidence for reincarnation, as well as deathbed visions and near-death experiences. We'll do a little bit less with that, but we're going to focus primarily on reincarnation. But he said, I am not out to prove reincarnation, I'm out to follow the evidence. And in fact, he said, I think a lot of the things that are taught in Hinduism and Buddhism about karma don't bear out by the evidence. We don't come back for karma according to the evidence. It doesn't mean that's wrong. My point is, we're not looking at trying to prove or disprove any religious philosophy. What we're doing this morning, and this is a very unity and a very new thought kind of idea, we're looking for the truth. And I think sometimes even in new thought, we can kind of get buried under our old doctrines instead of just opening the doors and saying, let's look for the truth. So this is what Stevenson is doing. So I want to introduce you to Stevenson, and the second thing I want to do this morning in this brief time is to maybe whet your appetite to come and spend the 3 weeks with us looking at this. And at the end, I'll mention some books. Maybe even if you don't come to the class, you'll pick up one or two of these books and read them. This is not a bookish thing. It's not something that's just a sort of intellectual exercise. I'm not doing it for that reason. I'm doing it because the books are a doorway, a portal into fascinating evidence that may be the most, the best evidence we have for something like this. And Stevenson and I, myself, begin this as a skeptic. And I think we all ought to begin all these things as a skeptic. What first caught my attention about this topic of the possibility of evidence for reincarnation is that Carl Sagan, y'all remember Carl Sagan, Cosmos, back in the 80s, billions and billions of years ago, you know, that whole thing? Sagan was a huge skeptic. He was open. He was an agnostic skeptic. He called himself an agnostic atheist. That is, he wasn't a confirmed dogmatic atheist. He pretty much didn't believe in a personal God, but his mind was open to the paranormal. But he said, I have not seen any evidence for the paranormal. Sagan said, I've not seen any evidence for the paranormal except, he said, there's one area, and I quote, this is from Carl Sagan. However, he said, serious study needs to be done with young children who report details of a previous life, which upon checking turn out to be accurate, and which they could not have known about in any other way than something like reincarnation or re-embodiment. Now, this is very strong language from a man who spent much of his life trying to prove the paranormal is a hoax. And he said in most cases he could prove it. But he said this is one area where the evidence needs to be researched more deeply. This is that exactly what Dr. Ian Stevenson did. Let me give you just a brief history of Stevenson. He was born in 1918, died in 2007, so he lived to be almost 90. And he did this research literally right up until just days before his death. But he started as an up-and-coming psychiatrist, educated at a really good school in Scotland, came to America, and was really well known for his work in psychiatry. Easily, as a young man, got a job at the University of Virginia in the just beginning Department of Psychiatry, and he spent 10 years in that. Really forming that department at the University of Virginia. But he came across a case in his studies about a parent who said their child kept talking about living a past life, saying things like, you're not my real mother, or I have another mother, and my father, and my siblings, and their names. And then the parents who were talking to him about this said, we actually went to find these people, and we found them. And many of the things this child, 2-3-year-old, was saying were confirmed by what we found. Well, this fascinated Stevenson, and he decided he was going to make his life work. So in 1967, there was a new department, the Department of Personality Studies, they called it. Because in his view, what passes from one life to the next, possibly, and this is in the realm of paranormal, is the personality passes from one body to another. How that happens, he doesn't say or know. Some speculation. We'll do a little bit of that in the class. Why it happens, he doesn't know. He doesn't say. That's more of a metaphysical question. We'll speculate a little bit more about that in the class. But he wanted to find out, does it actually happen? So from 1967 to 2001, he became the director of a brand new department at the University of Virginia studying these paranormal reincarnation accounts. And he studied over 3,000 over a 40-year period. And let me just say very briefly that he said in those 3,000 cases that he and a growing team studied, about 1,500, roughly 50% of them, had enough substantial evidence, not just peripheral evidence, but substantial evidence, that he said these have to be considered very probable cases of re-embodiment. We're going to talk about one of those cases right now. What I want to do is spend just a few minutes looking at, hopefully you can see this little book titled Soul Survivor. And this was just one of the cases that they researched, and this one actually came out in the book. It's an American case. We're going to talk about that for a few moments. If you Google this, you'll find YouTube, ABC Morning, Good Morning America did a whole program on this book, Soul Survivor. Other television shows picked it up and did something with it. They tend to sensationalize it because the audience doesn't want the boring evidence. They want the sensational story. But nevertheless, it's been covered. So, Soul Survivor, let me give you just the basics of this story. A little boy was born to Andrea and Bruce Leininger. Andrea and Bruce Leininger. And this little boy was named James. And about the age of two, in fact, exactly at the age of two, little James said to his parents one day, "I used to fly airplanes." And of course, parents, those of us who've had little children, know that they say things. They've been watching television, they've read books, they hear things from all over the place, and they just say things. And oftentimes they're wrapped in a fantasy, and we just watch them as they play with their dolls or their toy soldiers or trucks or cars or whatever they're doing. And we watch them fantasize, and we all did that as children. But this little boy talked about being a pilot. And one day he said to his mother, "I used to fly a Corsair." For those of you who know anything about airplanes, that's the name of a specific kind of plane. His mother said, "What's a Corsair?" And he said, most people don't know about those. She said they'd never talked to him about it. They didn't even know about it. He said, well, maybe he saw it on television somewhere. She said, I don't think so. He wasn't too into documentaries, but maybe. As time went on, he began to talk about wanting to go to the airport and look at planes. And she said, well, you know, kids have these sort of fantasies. Now, Stevenson, in his work, kind of bouncing back and forth between these cases and Stevenson, Stevenson said one of the things they discovered in studying these 3,000 cases is that in the young children, a lot of times the children who claim to have lived in previous lives have a love for something specific. In this case, it was airplanes. For others, it's different things. But it's related to their claims for a previous life. In other words, Stevenson said, it may not be just genetics and environment that give us our loves and talents, but there may be some field that we belong to as a personality that is stored, that has these experiences, and as we come into this world, we come into this world with some of these predispositions and these loves and likes. So little James loved airplanes. But little James also started having nightmares at about the age of two. And his mother heard him one night thrashing around in the room and screaming out loud, and she came in the room and she'd read in some child-rearing book that you don't wake a child in the midst of a nightmare, so she let him thrash about. When he finally woke up, she said, "Are you all right?" And he said, "Little boy crashed an airplane." And for the next few weeks, he had these nightmares every single night. And she said these weren't just little squirming in bed nightmares. These were full-blown, screaming terror nightmares, and it was always about a plane crash. So they finally took him to a psychiatrist, Carol Bowman, and I want you to know that name because she's written a couple of books on this past life stuff. Not past life regression. This is not past life regression. Stevenson makes it very clear that that's another phenomenon altogether, and it's almost impossible to find evidence for that. But he claimed that he had been in World War II, and he began to The Carol Bowman said to the parents, let him talk about it. Most parents, when their children have these sorts of fantasies, they sort of discourage them to bring them into reality. She said, let him talk about it. So little James started to talk, and he told his mom and dad that he had died at Iwo Jima in a plane crash, that he was a fighter pilot, and that he had been on the Natoma. I think he called it the Natona, as a little 3-year-old by this point. And they said, what's a Natona? And he said, well, that was the ship that my plane flew off of. And they said, okay. By the way, both of them were evangelical Christians, so they were not keen on the reincarnation idea. Now, his mother was sort of a New Age evangelical Christian. She kind of liked some of the New Thought stuff, but she thought they were a little too wacky. But she kind of liked some of their ideas, so she was a little more open than the dad. They were both educated, highly educated, and the father started to do some research as this little boy began to talk about his experiences. And it was just the beginning of the computer and the internet. Dad went online, did some research, looked Natoma, Natona, and he found that there was an aircraft carrier in the area of Iwo Jima in 1945, and from that, planes took off and were part of the invasion or the war with the Japanese in 1945. The little boy kept talking, and he said, "My name was James." And they said, "Well, of course your name is James." He goes, "No, my name was James. I'm James 3. And they said, "Well, who was James 2? "That's who I was before." Stevenson said one of the things that convinced him this was not done because of coaching is because all of these cases he studied, the people speak in the first person. I, me. They don't speak about as if it happened to someone else that they know about. It's not an intersecting field of consciousness. They actually speak in the first person as of having the experience, hence the nightmares or the love for whatever it was that they loved. And he said, he began to look on the internet, and he found that there was an aircraft carrier named the Natoma Bay, that the planes flew off of it. So he did some more research. In the meantime, little James the Third was continuing to talk. He did this from about ages 2 to 5, between the ages of 2, 5, and 6. And Stevenson said, in their universal studies, they find that this is the time period when these children talk about this stuff. And it begins to fade around the age of 7, 8, 9, 10. And typically by the age of 10, 11, and 12, the memories are almost completely gone. And by the age of 20, in the majority of the cases, they don't remember anything about it. And they said, "I don't know what I was even talking about." Some do, but many don't. Anyway, he said, "I was in Iwo Jima. My plane flew off of that aircraft carrier, and I was shot down." And they said, "Well, where were you shot down?" He said, "The front of the plane was hit, and it exploded, and I went down, and there was a big fire, and I died." Well, they decided to do a little more research on this, and they found that there was the Natoma. And, oh, one thing, the little boy said, "I had a very good friend. His name was," what was his name? I've got it here on a slide, let me look, Jack Larson. He said, "I had a friend on the Natoma, a pilot named Jack Larson." So the father got hold of people in the Navy, and they looked through records, and this took several months of research, and they found someone named Jack Larson who'd been on the Natoma. They contacted Jack Larson. He was an older man by then. And he said, "Yes, of course, I knew that pilot that flew that plane, the only one that was shot down in that war that we, or the encounter we had there in Iwo Jima, his name was James Houston." And this was the name that little James said, "That was me." So Jack Larson shows up, and this little boy had named Jack as his buddy. Jack actually existed there. Now, this goes into a whole lot more detail. There was further verification. There were all kinds of details that came out. So many, and to such a case, that this little book was later written by the parents. And some people say, "Well, they just wrote this to make money." No, when you listen to the parents interviewed, the parents had no intention of writing a book about their little boy in reincarnation. In fact, they said this would have been the last thing on their radar. Now, let me just say this before I wrap it up here. There's lots of books that we're going to be looking at in this class, and I'm going to be suggesting, and many of them are easy reading. Ian Stevenson is a little harder because his research is very, very meticulous and scientific in its notations. But some of the people who have worked with him have written books in a more popular format. Here's a book titled Old Souls by Tom Schroeder, a journalist. Tom Schroeder had heard about some of these stories and heard about Ian Stevenson. And he asked Stevenson if he could go with him on some of his trips. And he went with him to Lebanon, where they studied about 20 years after Stevenson had been there in the 60s. They studied some cases to just kind of go back and see if they still held water. And Schroeder said, "I went with him as a skeptic." Schroeder had studied past life regression, hypnosis, reincarnation, and he concluded that there was no strong evidence for that. Now, I know that makes a lot of people upset. It doesn't mean it's not true, Schroeder said, but he said, I couldn't follow the evidence as a skeptic. So he came to Stevenson with that same mindset, and he began to look at some of these cases. The Leiniger case that I just talked about was one, but there were many, many others that he looked at, and he ended up writing this book, Old Souls, as a journalist. And as a journalist who keeps his mind very open in the work, as does Stevenson, but he came to the conclusion that there is good evidence that there's something, something more going on than fraud or mistaken identities. All right, so I want to close with by doing a couple of things here. First of all, I want to look at Charles Fillmore and what he said about reincarnation. Now, this is kind of moving from an evidentiary-based approach, which we've done with Stevenson, to a so what question. And this is an address to a group of people that probably have that question, so what? What does this mean that we reincarnate or we re-embody and come back to this earth in different forms? Here's what Fillmore said back in the, I think it was the 1930s. He wrote a book called Dynamics for Living. And he says this, he says, the Western world in general looks upon re-embodiment or reincarnation as a heathen doctrine. Many people close the door of their minds upon it without waiting to find out what message it brings when interpreted in the light of the truth. He said, it is the object of this presentation in the book Dynamics for Living, and some of you I know have read that, it is the object of this presentation to set forth the unity teaching concerning reincarnation, to show why we consider it reasonable, and Stephen's work is reasonable, if anything, and to explain its relation to and its place in the Christ doctrine. Let me just say before I continue with this quote here, that part of the class will also be asking and answering this question, does Christianity or Judaism, Western religion, support reincarnation? And the answer is, historically in the early church movement, there were a number of people that saw reincarnation and resurrection as working together. We're going to talk about that. And Fillmore is doing his work in the context of this Christian teaching. He goes on and he says this, the teaching of Jesus Christ is that all persons shall be made free from sin and be saved to the uttermost, spirit, soul, and body. Until this salvation is attained, there is death. To give humans the opportunity to get the full benefit of salvation, life is necessary. A body through which to express is also necessary. When a person loses their body by death, the law of expression works within that person for re-embodiment, the last statement. Fillmore says, re-embodiment should not be given undue importance, and this is something Stevenson stresses. Reincarnation is not something that needs to be magnified. The question is, does it happen? And Fillmore's question is, if it does happen, what is it a means to? In other words, the end is not the doctrine of reincarnation. There's got to be some bigger reason for it. Here's what Fillmore says. Reincarnation is merely a temporary remedy to be followed by the real miracle, which is resurrection. Now, this was the Christian position, as we're going to look in the class for a few minutes, we'll look at it, the idea that many of the early Christians believed that we continued to re-embody until we had reached this place of maturity or completion or individuation, and at that point, there would be resurrection. This is what Fillmore taught. But, he said, the whole person, spirit, soul, and body, must be lifted into the Christ consciousness of life and life completed. So this is an answer to the question, why do we come back? And it is that old cliche, to learn lessons. And I say it's a cliche because sometimes I say it mindlessly. But if this is true, if it's true, and I'm not here to dogmatically say it is, but I think if you look at this research, there's really good evidence. If it's true, then we come to this earth school, I call it soul making, we come to this earth school to have a myriad experiences in order to perfect or to complete this thing called the field of soul. Another thing we're going to be looking at in this class is to sort of dismiss the notion that we are little souls that sort of bounce like Casper the Friendly Ghost from one body to the next.
Now more and more the physical or the physics is suggesting that each of us is a field of consciousness and an embodied field that comes into embodiment in flesh, incarnation, in order to have experiences that we can't in the spiritual bodies in the larger field. And that is why sometimes it feels like there's two of us. Because the field itself is the larger I, but the little I's come down here and embody in these different experiences we have on this earth. But they're always in communication through the field, like a compass in the magnetic field. They're always in communication, and that's why oftentimes we have this feeling that I am talking to me. I remember as a teenager standing and looking in the mirror in our bathroom, and, you know, teenagers just do that sort of thing, but I would stand there and look in the mirror, and I would look at that body, that face, and wonder who in the hell it was. It's like, I don't recognize him, but I recognize me. And this is the notion here that we're going to be exploring, that maybe we come back over and over and over, Hinduism, millions of times, and not just in this realm, but in many other realms, in order to make a unique soul. All right, I'm going to close there, but I just want to throw up, for those of you who are interested, I would suggest that you begin with Jim Tucker, Return to Life. This is a guy who works with Ian Stevenson and sort of took over the work after Stevenson died in 2007. Very good writer, very meticulous researcher. Or his other book, Life Before Life. And there are many, many others that we'll be looking at in the class. So I want to thank you for spending time with me this morning, and I hope this piques an interest, not just for the class, but maybe for looking further into this for your own experience of life on this earth. And I'm done. Thank you.
Time after time.
after time. Oh, time after time. Time after time.
If you enjoyed the Seattle Unity Sunday service, please hit the donate button so we can bring you even more uplifting music and messages. Or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. You can find directions and information about all our programs, classes, services, and events at www.seattleunity.org. Or find us on Facebook, where we post all our readings, links to more podcasts, and sermon videos. Seattle Unity, celebrating, inspiring, and deepening our individual and collective spiritual journeys. Shine.